If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
WGN Radio, I got a call while I was sitting with my folks over the weekend from Martin Jones at Office Desk warning me that my account had been compromised, or at least there was suspicious activity, and that I should call him to resolve the issue as soon as possible. And then I thought, oh crap, somebody's running my credit card, or I left a file open, or something is now going wrong. And the longer I sit here and do nothing about it, the worse the problem is going to be. We reached out to Steve Burness and asked Steve, the president and CEO at the Better Business Bureau, how can you tell when you're being scammed and somebody is calling to help, or that the helper is actually the scammer? Steve, welcome back. How are you today? You're on the air.
Good afternoon, John. Thank you so much for having me today.
What do you make of my brief story there?
Well, most likely it is a scam. What happens is they try to call people, like you stated, or they send you a text message that something is dire or wrong. You need to call them back quickly to resolve it. What we're suggesting at the Better Business Bureau is getting to a point, John, the spam calls are so bad and the scams are so bad since the pandemic, is not to answer your phones anymore or your text messages. And like you did, leave to go to your voicemail. That's the smartest thing to do. Then call your credit card company directly, or the card they're talking about, from the phone number on the back of your card, just in case, because credit card companies do call and they do send texts.
Yeah.
But again, the scammers send more. They sent out 225 billion spam texts last year. These are stats from RoboKiller, John, last year. That's up from 88 billion the year before. So it's getting to a point, John. I mean, I'm getting texts all the time. My account's wrong. Something's wrong. And they just throw everything at the wall, John, sees what sticks, and they'll just grab the person who calls.
Person who called, Martin Jones, had a very pronounced accent. You know, I've met a Marty Jones. They don't sound like this guy. But then I thought, don't do that, John. Just because a guy has an accent doesn't mean he's not legit. And I thought, I have so many lines in the water, right? Credit cards, email accounts. Think about all of the things that require in your world a secure password. You can't keep track of it all. So when somebody says something and you're not familiar with the source of the problem, he didn't say he was from Chase Bank, right? But I thought maybe it's from something that I have and I should pay attention to this. You can appreciate my apprehension, right?
I can, John, exactly. But we're saying usually the legitimate companies will tell you where they're calling from and leave a phone number that you can hopefully go into Google and do a reverse search of it and see what it is. But a lot of times the scammers do use common names, John, and that's just to make you think that they're here and local and they're hard to look up online because there's a million Jones out there. They're not going to use, Steve Burness because there's only a few of us and we've easily traced. So they kind of use that common names and whether or not, how good their English is, it doesn't matter today's world. You know, scammers are just like the regular people. You know, they'd be calling from a different country, they could be calling from here. It doesn't matter what they sound like or look like because you can't tell a scammer by the way they sound or look.
Is Office Desk a thing? He said he was calling from Office Desk. And I thought, oh, I'll bet that's some software that the company uses or that I did. Yeah.
I have not heard of Office Desk at all, but it just sounds like he's calling from an official place. And they want you to do something quickly. You usually call them back.
Right.
So they tip off the ripoff, John, is ignore those calls. And if you think it's some of your credit card company, call your company directly. And most times the scammers will tell you they're calling from UPS or Amazon. They're not. They're basically, lying, and they're basically, saying that they're somebody and they're imposters. But we need consumers also to go to our scam tracker, John. It's so important for your loyal listeners to please go to bbb.org and /scam tracker and let us know about these scams. Because then we notify the authorities, and then that's how we do our weekly warnings as well. And the only way to put scammers out of business, John, is, as you know, is not to give them your business. There's not enough courts, laws, or anything in this world to protect you from scammers. You got to protect yourself like you did.
You make me laugh because he might as well have said, I'm calling from official place. office desk. I mean, like, oh, I've got a desk in my office, and sometimes at least, you know, I can just see that's a window to my world, my office desk, and so this is the company that the company has hired, and I mean, I was inventing all of these eventualities in my head, thinking I need to get on this right away. The guy also did leave a phone number for me to call, so I can call him back, and then I thought maybe I shouldn't even do that. So I want you to just humor me for one more minute about this scenario, and then something you also mentioned. I frequently get very legitimate looking notices from UPS or FedEx saying we had trouble delivering a package. What advice do you have for us about that? Steve Burness, President and CEO at the Better Business Bureau. You may have a question like this too. I was scammed, or somebody attempted to scam me over the weekend. Steve's been kind of walking me through what's happened and what we should all do about that. By the way, I wonder how that scam would have played out. So I get a call from some guy, Martin Jones, calling me from office desk to tell me I need to call him because there's been suspicious activity on my account. What would have happened if I'd called him? Do you have any idea how that conversation plays out, Martin, Steve?
Yes, John, there's many different ways they do, but normally what they'll do is they ask you for your account number to make sure that it's your account. So you got to give them all your account number, and then they might ask you for your password, or they may send you a link to click on the link. And that's the key, John, is that link. You never want to click on links because obviously you never know where it can go, and it can, you know, it can lead to spam or malware on your computer, and it can lock your computer. I mean, because you don't know what you're clicking on. And you remember probably five or six years ago, the South Suburban Police Station, they had to pay the ransomware because the scammers were able to lock the police computers up. And I know a recent law firm just paid $1 million to unlock their computers as well to get all their data back. So it's very disconcerting what's happening out there, John. But there's so many different ways that they try to extract information from you, that they can ask you for your Social Security number. I've seen so many different ways. There's no one typical call other than asking information that the company already has. So what I'm saying by that, John, is they already have your account number. You don't need to give them your account number. And that's what we call the tip-off to rip-off.
Sure. Hello. I mean, of course.
Right.
I'm the customer. They have my account number. Why do they? Well, I suppose they may say something like, well, we need to verify that you are who you say you are. But you called me, Jack. So you guys are, you're the one telling me I've got a problem. So don't ask me to give you any information. Fair enough. What about these messages I get, which look very legit from UPS or FedEx, some delivery service, saying that they couldn't, nobody was home or there was a problem with the address, but I've got a package waiting. We get packages all the time, so I'm willing to believe these messages. How do I know who's legit? I don't want to leave something somewhere that I should be getting.
Exactly, John. Some are legit. Obviously, some will actually, you know, be legitimate calls and text messages, but majority of them are not. And that seems to be number one and number two scams with the BBB in terms of these types of scams. They're really trying to send you a link to click on to check on your package, John. A legitimate site, you know, won't have a link inside. They'll have your tracking number and things of that nature. So if you think it's your local delivery service or FedEx or whomever, they would rather call them to prevent you from being scammed. They're not going to send links to click on a link inside of it to go to another site.
Really?
So you got to be very careful.
Hey, John Williams, I have learned if I hover my mouse over an email, I can see the email address from someone before opening. Is that you understand that to be true, Steve?
Yeah, the URL is correct, but sometimes when you hover over it, you can get an email address, you can get the website, but sometimes they embed the company's name in there. So it can be, you know, TYZ, Amazon, and people see Amazon, they think it's a legitimate site. So that's still not a safety mechanism, but a legitimate company, if they're asking for information, they're not going to send you a Gmail. So that's the key. So if you do hover over it and see it's a Gmail, Amazon's not going to send you an email asking you to click on a Gmail account. Mm.
This person goes on to say, this is Joe listening to us in Minneapolis. I can see when I do that, when the email is a bunch of random letters and not a real email. As you just said, it's prevented a ton of scams. But I have not figured out how to do this on my phone. It's computer only. Is that a limitation of that scheme?
Unfortunately, it is a limitation of phone. You don't have nothing to hover over on your smartphones. It's best, like I mentioned to you, no matter what state you live in, is don't click on those links. Don't click on those emails. Don't answer your phone. Let it go to voicemail. And then do your due diligence on it by doing some research and calling the company that's allegedly sent it to you, John.
Steve, the Better Business Bureau has an article about travel insurance. What's the advice on travel insurance?
Well, travel insurance is up to if you need it or not. I mean, that's up to you. And depending, you got to check out that travel insurance company and see what the record is on them. A lot of times when people, you know, do traveling with a known entity, they provide the insurance automatically and they give you limitations. But always the big print giveth, John, the little print taketh away. So you got to make sure you read everything about the travel insurance, even the small print, because things can, you know, be taken away from that big print. What I mean by that is, oh, because you didn't do XYZ, you're not going to get the travel insurance or we're not going to pay you for it. And then there's third-party travel companies, like every other travel industry has third parties. You got to do your research before you click that yes and agree and buy it, because sometimes you don't have any refunds and exchanges. And there's so much information out there, John, now about companies, and you just have to do your due diligence, check with the Better Business Bureau, other sources, put in the company's name in Google and put the word scam next to it. And see what comes up. There's just so much information out there, but consumers do all the checking after, John. That's probably my biggest frustration in my 36-year career. They do all that checking, you know, when they got scammed. They should have done it before, and they wouldn't have been scammed.
And I'm checking to see if the insurance company itself is legit. If I do have one that is legit, that still might not give me the sort of coverage that I thought I was going to get. I'm reading from your website, travelers who have purchased policies that include cancel for any reason, CFAR, cancel for any reason coverage, may still be unable to recoup some funds. Pandemics are routinely listed as exclusions in policies. So read the fine print. Is that still true? I mean, is it possible that COVID will not will void my insurance policy?
Certain ones, John, there's exclusions and limitations on each one. And that's why I'm saying that you got the big print giveth, the little print taketh away. So you got to read that little print and see what the exclusions and limitations are. Every policy is different, so I can't comment specifically on that policy. But we've seen a lot of consumers who think they, you know, can cancel on a trip, and all of a sudden they get a letter from the insurance company saying denied because you didn't do XYZ, which was mentioned on the website that you agreed to and checked okay, and you didn't even read it because it was two or three pages long, and you went on to the next thing.
BBC also has a scam alert about fitness apps. What's the problem there?
Well, fitness apps, sometimes, depending on what kind of company has the fitness apps, but then also are they fake fitness apps as well? And there's so many of them. What are they doing with this information you're putting in there? So you got to check on these apps, not because it's on Google Play or the App Store doesn't make them legitimate organization. Just like, John, in the business world, just because they have a storefront or a website doesn't make them a great business. You have to do a lot of checking, and a lot of time in the fitness apps, they ask you a lot of personal information, and that information can be used against you to steal your identity. So be careful who you're doing business with.
I'm surprised to hear you say that just because it's on the platform, Apple Play or whatever, that doesn't make it legit. They don't screen these other companies before they host them?
They do some screening, but some of the scammers get in there, infiltrate it in any way they possibly can, just like the Taylor Swift tickets. The same thing, you know, on this Facebook Marketplace scams. I mean, a lot of people have been victimized. I have a relative who's victimized from it, and she did it on Facebook thinking Facebook Marketplace is safe.
Oh, yeah.
But unfortunately, the scammers infiltrate anyone on those websites. Doesn't matter how big or small the company is, the scammers know how to get into those and try to separate you from your money.
Yeah, I remember reading about one Taylor Swift scam locally. Somebody hacked somebody else's Facebook friends and then sent out a blast to all their Facebook friends saying, hey, I've got Taylor Swift tickets if you want them. And so a woman who was trying to get Taylor Swift tickets for her daughter said, oh my God, that's great. She wired her or Venmo'd her the money. The person didn't have the tickets and the money was gone. That's what you're, I presume, describing.
Exactly, John, to the T, exactly. And there's always unconventional payment methods. They don't want you to use your credit card. They want you to use Venmo or the other cash apps. And I want consumers to be aware that you don't have the same protection you do that has afforded you on your credit card. So what I mean by that, John, if you do a Venmo or if you do a cash app to somebody and you give it to them, it doesn't matter if the case is fraudulent or the tickets are fraudulent, it doesn't matter. You willingly gave somebody money. You don't have the protection like you do on your credit card with fraud protection. So please, and that's how they got away with it. There were so many arrests after the Taylor Swift con. I think there was 12 or 13 arrests that I know of that happened at the establishment itself, but all the other hundreds of consumers that are being victimized throughout the U.S. On fake websites.
I'm out of time, Steve, but you said there have been a dozen people that were arrested. I thought they never caught these people. They arrested some of the scammers?
Yes, according to, what website it was. They caught them there because the people were there trying to buy tickets, so they caught them that way. But usually they don't get them, John, if they're done on the website. They're gone and quickly gone.
1228. Okay, that's Steve Burness, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau. Steve, very helpful today, as always. Thanks for your time.
Right. My pleasure, John. Thank you.
WGN, Mark Jacobs is the partner at Let Us Entertain You, lettuce.com, for the restaurant chain folks love in these parts. Hey, Mark, you're on the air again. How are you?
Excellent. How are you today, John?
Pretty good. I understand that the 10-year anniversary of Beatrix is tomorrow. Is that right?
Yes, we opened June 20th, 2013. We're very excited to be celebrating 10 years.
You have any numbers to go with that? Like how many cookies served? How many cups of coffee? How many salads?
You know, I've never added them up, but it would be a very big number, I can tell you that.
For those who don't know the restaurant, describe Beatrix.
You know, Beatrix is your neighborhood coffee house restaurant meeting place. When we opened, we featured healthy meats, delicious specials, a lot of food that we like to eat, comfort, recognizable food, and it's caught on. People, I think, use it as their meeting spot, as their date night, as their breakfast go-to. We're really a neighborhood restaurant.
So give me some of the popular items on the menu then.
Well, how do you not start with cookies and dessert? But our caramel pie is definitely a signature item that we've become very known for. On the menu itself, we're open breakfast, lunch, dinner, brunch, and everything in between. So in the morning, maybe it's a chicken tinga or our light and fluffy lemon pancakes. In the afternoon, our straight-A salad, a dish that's been on the menu since we opened. You can't go wrong with our mushroom quinoa burger or our signature burger. At nighttime, we're featuring now, we have different, God, there's so many dishes that I love. One of the favorites would be the wild salmon served with bok choy and different vegetables. I also love what's new on the menu that we've added. We just did a loaded guacamole under the snacks that we like a lot. We're constantly changing and adding new items.
Yeah. And just one other question. The room, just kind of describe the flavor or the airiness of the room.
Sure, it's super open, a little bit of retro, hanging fern plants, wonderful eclectic light fixtures with
sofas,
a warm glow, leather seats, different greens and yellows and oranges and a lot of wood tones.
And what is it, five locations now? Is that how many Beatrix? What's the plural of Beatrix?
I like what you did. Beatrix is perfect. Yes, we a couple years after River North, we opened Streeterville, then Fulton Market. Right before the pandemic, we opened in Oakbrook Mall, and now we opened in the Loop on Wacker and Randolph. And we also have Beatrix Markets as well, where you can have our food on the go.
The Beatrix brand turns 10 tomorrow to celebrate. Beatrix River North will be offering specials, including $1 drip coffees, $1 assorted cookies, $10 reward dollars to all Let Us Entertain You frequent Diners Club members that check in. You can also take a quiz online about the brand, and you could win a $100 gift certificate. Do I have to ace this quiz to get the $100?
You do, but I have to tell you, I couldn't have said it better myself. You're doing great.
Well, I don't know the answers to all these questions. I've been there before, but I can't say that I'm so studied in this. I don't even know where Beatrix comes from, and that's one of the questions. Is that the family dog? Is that the matriarch? Who is Beatrix?
Well, I guess I'll give you a freebie for the quiz.
All right.
So Beatrix came from both Richard Melman and his wife's mothers. Had B in their name, and it really stemmed from a tribute to the moms and to the matriarchs of the Melman family.
I'm going to guess that the straight A salad, this is one of the questions, and you don't need to answer this, would be because all of the foods in the salad are full of antioxidants, so it's a nutritious value. But it could be that originally it was an arugula salad, that's the letter A. Or during tastings, everybody said, this is an A, and it became the straight A salad. So I'm not sure, but that's the kind of very clever on-brand trivia you guys have. I can take this quiz online, right?
Yes, and I'm not going to give you the answer. I gave you one freebie. But something in there is right on, John.
How's business from a staffing standpoint? How hard is it to do, even at a popular place like yours, how hard is it for you all to do what you do?
Well, I think, you know, staffing certainly the last few years has been more challenging, but we're in a much better place today. And I think people are back to work, they're coming back to work, and we continue to find great talent to strengthen our team.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad for you. I will say that as a person who eats out often enough, both at LEYE restaurants as well as other places around the area, when I go in, I expect that everybody's going to be somewhat stressed, that it's not going to be as easy for them to do what they do as it was before 2020. Is that kind of, what do you make of that expectation walking into a restaurant?
Well, hopefully we're working to change that. I think that did exist, especially a couple of years ago, but we're finding ourselves in a better place. And we don't want the guest coming in to feel the pressures that we were feeling over the last several years. And hopefully you're going to start seeing a change in that, John.
Isn't that an interesting point? Because the stress that a host feels, this is true if you're having a dinner party. When Brenda and I would have people over sometimes, I was so filled with angst about making sure everybody was having a good time, that I don't think people were having as good a time as they should have been having because they could see the angst in my face, my body language. I think that when I walk into a restaurant now, if the staff is relaxed and chill, I mean, literally at the front desk, if they're relaxed and chill, I feel that right away. I'm just, I'm a guest now. You know what I mean?
First impressions mean so much, and you're absolutely right. And you do want to set the tone, right? It's the first encounter, whether that's on the phone, whether it's online, whether it's with valet. That first impression really sets the tone for the dining experience.
I had that conversation with my son this weekend. He was cooking for everybody for Father's Day weekend. He's pretty good in the kitchen. He's got good recipes. He executes well. But we were all in the kitchen, and the dog was in the kitchen, and the baby was in the kitchen. And he was not digging that scene, you know? And later I said something like, you know, thank you for cooking. He goes, yeah. I said, I know you get a little tense when we're all in the kitchen. He goes, I know I need to work on that. Now, maybe we should get the dog out of the kitchen, number one. But number two, if for us to enjoy the meal and our time together, you know, some of that was incumbent upon him, too, wasn't it?
Well, I'm still making an impression on my 10-year-old son, and I will tell you the fact that your son is cooking, I think, is brilliant, and that he wants to do that for you is wonderful.
It is.
And that he's aware enough to say he needs to work on it is also a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you all pay attention to that, too, because the food, the location, the decor is a lot, and then that whole vibe at Beatrix turning 10 is very, very nice. So Mark Jacob Jacobs is on a line. Remember, you get great discounts at the River North location. You can take their 10-question quiz if you go to their website. They are celebrating 10 successful years in Chicago starting tomorrow. And just go to lettuce.com. Would that be how I take the quiz, Mark? Go to lettuce.com?
Actually, an even better way to stay informed would be to follow us on Instagram at Beatrix Restaurants, and they will share updates on Instagram with our guests.
What is Rich Melman's favorite dish on the menu? Light and fluffy lemon pancakes? Chicken baby? Ham and cheese croissant? All of the above. It's got to be the all of the above. It's like your children, right?
You can't pick just one.
It's nice to talk to you, Mark. Stay in touch. Thanks for joining us.
John, thanks so much. Have a great week.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The majority of employees at first-time venture capital funds in Chicago are women for the first time ever. The 2022 VC Diversity Report puts that number at just under 51%. The report surveyed 116 firms in the Chicago area that made at least one venture investment in the past 2 years and collected data from 884 employees. One of the report's authors tells Chicago Inno the report shows people are launching their own funds in a way that's more inclusive. The report also shows the share of women in the VC workforce overall at 34.7%. Despite the growth year over year, Chicago trails the national average of 47%. Employees at the Museum of Science and Industry are the latest cultural workers in Chicago to form a union. 140 employees will be members of a bargaining unit called Museum of Science and Industry Workers United. Those employees work in the museum's guest experience, guest operations, and education department. It's the seventh workplace in Chicago to join Cultural Workers United. Others include the Art Institute of Chicago, the Field Museum, the Notabart Nature Museum, and Newberry Library. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. Let's begin with this.
I want to say happy Black Farmers Week in the state of Illinois.
Yeah, we did celebrate in April, and with today's observance of Juneteenth marking the end of slavery in the United States, it's worth looking at where Black farmers are in Illinois and the U.S. right now. But first, we are sponsored today by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Black farmers in Illinois?
In 1920, Illinois had 892 Black farmers.
And now?
As of the 2017 USDA Agricultural Census, there are 188 individually Black-owned farms.
Sonia Harper is a state representative from the south side of Chicago and is chair of the House Agriculture Committee. There are more than 70,000 farms in Illinois, and fewer than 200 are owned by Blacks. And?
As agriculture is the largest job-producing industry in the state, and as farming has become big business, it has also become one of the least diverse industries in the state.
In Illinois, traditional farming is dominated by white farmers, but where Black farmers dominate is in urban areas.
We have a beautiful network of Black and brown farmers in the city of Chicago.
Boisa Itaji is with Growing Greater Inglewood.
We need more small farmers in cities growing food so that if the supply chain has any disruptions, we still have everything we need within our communities.
And urban farming is different.
We are helping to heal some of that soil. A lot of it is contaminated. And we are working to have more ecological practices of growing food, pulling on the African traditional practices of working with the soil, with the earth, and not against it.
Representative Harper says a handful of bills are circulating Springfield to help support Black farm owners in Illinois.
This year, our ask specifically for the socially disadvantaged farmer grants is $5 million.
And at the federal level, billions of dollars for disadvantaged farmers were included in President Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus relief package, all of which advocates say is a step toward righting a wrong after a century of mistreatment of Black farmers by the government and others. From the farm to your belly, today is World Martini Day. No farmers, no martinis, shaken or stirred. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
I don't know what it's like where you work, but more of us are having to work more in the office now than we have in the last few years. I'm not sure where that needle is finally going to rest. Maybe not 5 days a week. But the point is this, that as you do get more face-to-face reaction or interaction with your colleagues, some of us are a little rusty at office small talk or networking or some of the interpersonal skills that we so relied on in 2019. To talk a little bit about this is Andres Lares, who is a managing partner at Shapiro Negotiations Institute. Andres, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Listen to that. Good, positive, interactive. I love your snap. I love your style already.
Well, let's hope you still feel that way by the end of it.
But that is really what we're talking about. How do I interact? How do I talk to people? But is the premise for this conversation really all that true? Are people rusty at interpersonal communication?
Well, I think there is a little bit of rust, and then there's also even more perceived rust. And so I guess maybe those are, although related, two independent things. And so once you start jumping back into it, I think we'll find very quickly we're social beings. And so it's like kind of riding a bike, you know, jump right back into it. So it can be scarier to think about than it is in real life.
I've also heard, though, that what has since happened is that people are talking about or sharing inappropriate things, stuff that you might have been more comfortable at home or with your private social network of friends, but no, we don't do that in the office. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I think that's probably happening because not only is there more remote time, so there's less kind of social in-person time at the office, but the second is I think there's more and more blurring between kind of the work and life and those two different lives. As we're working more remotely and you're peering into people's, you know, wherever they're working from and it's remote, and they may be traveling or at home or so there's just kind of a little bit less of a level of officialness, if you will, to that communication. So I'm not surprised that that's what people are hearing.
To what end? I mean, why do we care? So somebody's awkward. Is this about the company being successful or me being mobile at work, moving up the chain? I mean, what's the upshot here?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I think there's a lot of different answers. But if you look at it the way we kind of see it at our own company and what our research tells us is that spending time together in person has a value in the sense that it makes it more likely that you'll develop rapport, trust, and, you know, a relationship with other folks and certainly in your office, so internally and potentially externally. And so if you're getting that FaceTime, that can help you. It may make it more likely that you potentially network internally to the company and are getting more likely to be promoted or raises or get more responsibility. So it can do some of that. But really, it's kind of a means to an end, if you will. At the end of the day, what we're looking for is better collaboration and more trust within the company. And so oversharing can probably hurt just as much as not getting any FaceTime and undersharing. And so it's a balance.
You wrote, comfort is the enemy of progress. Comfort is the enemy of progress. What does that mean?
Well, that means that just because you feel uncomfortable doing some in-person, whether it's networking or coming to the office, doesn't necessarily mean you should avoid it other way around. So if you're looking to further develop your skills, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable. And what most people find is that uncomfort, as I said at the beginning, is more in the pre that you're afraid of what it's going to be like. But when you actually get into it, you know, it's certainly not as scary for most people as you thought it might be.
At a social but work event, I don't know if it's a golf outing or some sort of conference and you're all hanging out, you said prepare talking points ahead of time. Are you talking about chit-chat? I mean, interpersonal stuff?
So you could, but more than anything, that kind of refers to writing down a few questions that you might ask folks. So let's say you're going to go to a conference or let's say you go to a golf tournament. So in general, there might be a theme to the conference or, you know, there's some reason why this golf tournament is putting people together. It could be a fundraiser. It could be a company event. And so having a few questions in your back pocket does two things. One is it really kind of gets you thinking in terms of asking questions and really, being driven by genuine curiosity. So engaging the other side rather than doing a lot of talking. And the second is it makes your instinct, when you're not sure what to do or say, it makes you go to a question. And so it will give you an increased level of confidence if you have some of those in your back pocket. Of course, you don't have to prepare everything that you're going to say, but having a couple in your back pocket can give you the confidence that'll make you feel a little bit more comfortable the next time you go to an event.
I like to think not knowing the answer is a sign of confidence. If you're willing to ask a question like, well, what's going on here? What's this all about? I mean, don't come in blind, but evidently you're sure enough of yourself to expose yourself to the fact that you don't know everything. And so to me, it's kind of a reverse measure of confidence when somebody says, when they ask a question.
Absolutely. Asking a question, especially when you don't know the answer to. Also, and as I mentioned, it's certainly a sign of genuine curiosity, right? If you're asking questions because you know the answer, it's a formality, and that can get old pretty quickly. But if you're asking questions to learn more, you know, why do they feel that way, or why does this happen, or whatever it may be about their business or their function or their company, you know, anything, it is a sign that there is a little bit of vulnerability, that it may go somewhere that you don't have all the answers, and that's perfectly fine.
One last thing. Talk about body language. What do you have to say about that?
Well, body language, we could do a whole session on that, but I would say to sum it up in a few parts. One, the biggest is body language, one aspect by itself doesn't mean much.
And so if you see someone, they cross their arms, I wouldn't read too much into that, or if you cross your arms, because the reality is you just could be cold, right? You could be sitting by the vent in a restaurant, and so you could be cold. But what you're really looking for is a consistent kind of set of body language pointing in the same direction. So if someone turns away slightly from you, they cross their arms, they're facing kind of, you know, 45 degrees away, they start doing a few things, they start fidgeting, well, that might be a sign that they're not interested in what you're saying. But just one individual one on its own may not say much. So that's one part. And the one other part is totally separately is that it is contagious. And so, for example, when you think of body language, if we're smiling, let's kind of include that in there. If you are smiling right before going into a networking event and you continue to throughout, unbelievably, two things will happen. So research tells you that, first of all, you'll actually get yourself in a more positive mindset, which is amazing. So it's not just when we're happy we smile. It's when we smile, we also become happier. And the second is it's contagious. So it's more likely the folks you're talking to will smile and they'll be more positive, which, of course, makes it a, you know, more fruitful conversation. So there's a there's kind of two parts of the body language worth mentioning there.
Boy, that's helpful. Andres Lares is the managing partner at Shapiro Negotiations Institute. Thanks for your help today. It's good to talk to you. Let's do this again.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.